This is the Rich Eisen Show.
It's bow time.
It's bow time.
I like it.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Out of Denver. Bo Nix is the starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos.
From the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
How about that?
Earlier on the show, ESPN senior NFL writer Jeremy Fowler. Coming up, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Jets defensive tackle, Quinnen Williams. Co-hosts of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast, Jason Moore and Mike Wright. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
That's right. Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air, watching all of the other family of networks, thanks to our Roku feed. By the way, the things you can get on the Roku portal, it's awesome. All the sports that you need. There's a Roku sports channel that we're on right now, just seeing a replay on NFL Network of last night's Amazon Prime game, and just seeing Joe Burrow with his M&M lid. You know, it's a little jarring.
Hi,
not going to lie.
My name is...
You know, it's just jarring. There he is right there on the sideline talking to Al. And
I wonder if he keeps it for the whole year.
And Herb Street. I hope he does. It's just great to see him back. I just want to see everybody full strength, ready to go. 2 weeks from today, we'll already have a result. It's awesome. Good to see you, TJ Jefferson, in your spot. DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts as well. As Susie Schuster sitting in for Chris Brockman. Good to see you, Suze, for hour number two of this program.
Good to be.
You got it. And joining us right here on the Rich Eisen Show is a dear friend back here on the program, Sports Illustrated's own Albert Breer. Good to see you, Albert. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing, Rich?
I'm great. Everything good in your neighborhood right here?
Everything's great. We got college football this weekend, right?
That's right. So
I can't believe how close it is. It's like my camp trip is done now.
They're done.
And less than 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Till Ravens Chiefs. I think 2 weeks from like now, right, is gonna be Eagles Packers in Brazil.
Are you gonna be at the kickoff? Are you going to KC?
I'm not positive on that yet.
Okay.
Still TBD.
Okay.
But I will be watching, of course, either way.
Well, we're bringing the show there. The only reason why I ask
is,
if you're going to be there, obviously you got a spot on our show. And I just want to see you in person to see how long does the training camp tan last? How long
is it
does
still
it...
here? I think it's fading a little bit, don't you?
No, not at all.
No.
I could see that. Although, I don't know. It matches all the scarlet behind you. So I think, kind of clashes with the scarlet.
I'm not that red, but I cheated a little bit this year too with my 9-year-old's football practices have gotten me outside a bunch too when I'm not on the road.
Fantastic.
So still I hopefully I can hold on to this for a little while longer.
Still, you've got the youthful glow, so soon you'll have the scarlet and then the gray on top of your hair. You'll get the full whole thing. So, but you were at Jets training camp this week, correct? That was your last one. That was your last sort of check-in
visit. It was the last swing. So I did Jets Monday, Giants Tuesday, and then I was with the Bucks and Dolphins. They practiced together on Wednesday.
All right, so let's take them in order. What'd you glean from the Jets, Albert?
A couple things. It's interesting. The first thing that everybody I talked to brought up was the offensive line and how good the offensive line looks, which to me is just about as important as anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're going to have Quinnen Williams on in your next segment, right? It'd be interesting to hear from him about what he's noticed because he had to go up against those guys in practice day to day. They have like what they view as three starting tackles in Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses, and Olufashanu, who's been great and could start at left tackle today if they needed him to. And then two backups that played a lot last year. So they feel like they've got five legitimate NFL tackles, which is way better than it was last year. And then the interior of their line, Joe Tippmann in his second year, and then Oliveira Tucker and John Simpson coming over from the Ravens. So I think like the fact that they've overinvested in the offensive line has certainly paid dividends. And going up against a defensive line that has, and this, I'm not misspeaking here, 7 former first round picks on it, has created an ideal situation in camp for them. So I don't want to get you too excited here. I kind of got the feel going there that they're where the Bucks were when they got Brady, that's sort of where the roster is. Like it's ready to go and it doesn't need a quarterback to be a superhero. So Aaron Rodgers won't need to be a superhero for them to compete week to week, which is ideal, for any quarterback. And then I got a lot of time on Monday. I got a bunch of time with Aaron Rodgers. And I will just say this. Like, I think he is more appreciative of the chance to play football. And he and I had a really interesting conversation about how there was a point in his life when he was really kind of caught up in trying to prove to everybody that his life is more than just football and that he's not just a football player. And, you know, it was just interesting talking to a guy at 40 years old, who obviously the end is much closer than the beginning, talk about how much he's appreciated about every bit of the process coming off of the Achilles and how he really wants to relish what he's got here and how cool it is to be a football player. Not that he's more than a, not that he's not more than a football player, but just how cool it is to be a football player. So it just seems like he's in a really good spot, Rich. And, you know, just talking to people there and based on the improvements they made on the offensive line, I'd be surprised if he doesn't kill it this year.
So how did you glean that though? I mean, what are you willing to share with all of us here, Albert, to that for you to come away to say that he's more appreciative of being a football player than say the last couple of years when he has been talking in many different media outlets, including our buddy McAfee, about things outside of football? What made you pick up on that? Did he literally say those words to you?
He flat out said it to me. Yeah. Like, okay. I mean, I think that there's just like going through what he went through. Obviously age is part of that too, but like going through what he went through, and having it taken away from you. And when you're around the team, and I'm sure you've heard pro athletes say this, I certainly have over the course of my career covering them, Rich, like that, you just like for an athlete, when you're hurt and you can't do anything to help the team, you almost feel like this, even if you're around them, this disconnection, that there's nothing you can do about. And, you know, I just think it's all of that that really has made him appreciate what's in front of him and appreciate the shot that he's got in front of him to go and win a Super Bowl and go and do something that no one's done, you know, for that franchise in half a century. And then, you know, the guys that he has around him too, and the team that he has around him and the shot that they all have collectively. It was interesting because we had a part of our conversation. I had mentioned to him that, like, you know, what I had always heard about Tom and, you know, and Brady, I think, you know, Brady has sort of confirmed this to me in the past too, that, you know, like most guys don't fall out of love with Sunday, right? Like when they retire, they fall out of love with Monday through Saturday. Yes, they fall indeed. They fall out of love with having to run up a hill in March. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So like, I think the one thing that was interesting talking to Aaron about this was that he was like, I loved all of that this year. I loved getting ready for the season. I loved being around my teammates in OTAs. I loved training camp, even mundane as it can be. I loved every part of it. And not that he didn't always really like those parts, but, you know, I think that I don't know. And this part's my perception of it, but I do think like part of that appreciation, again, is just having it snatched away from you. And, you know, especially when a guy gets injured at that age, I think that there's a, I think that there's just like that your football mortality slaps you in the face, right? Like you're not going to have this forever. And so, you know, just having the ability to appreciate every part of it. He hasn't played in a game yet. You know, he hasn't played in a regular season game since tearing his Achilles, but, you know, having a real appreciation, for every part of it. It was just really cool listening to him talk about that.
Sports Illustrated's Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, so then you saw the Giants as well, mm-hmm. which means you were there just after Daniel Jones had his dreadful appearance. It wasn't all – I mean, listen, there's always ups and downs, but, you know, throwing that pick six, it was just, wow. Like, is that what mm-hmm. we're going to see from him this year? What did you glean from Daboll and the Giants when you saw them?
First of all, no one sugarcoated that play. Like that play was not a good play. No one was saying that, you know, like it was anything but what it looked like. So that's number one. I do think there's a couple things to consider with Daniel Jones, though. He's only 9 months post-op. And so like that's, you know, like he's back, but like there's still some things that you're working through when you're at that point in the recovery. They say it takes a full year. So, you know, they're trying to accelerate him and ramp him up and get him ready for the season. But that there's that part of it. And there's another part of it that I don't know that this has been out there quite as much, but I thought it was interesting too. And I think this is always interesting when you're talking about how to assess how guys are playing in training camp. Brian Daboll is trying to coach him to be more aggressive, and they want him to be more aggressive. And part of that is the presence of Malik Nabers, you know, in his receiver group now. But they want him to take chances. They want him to test himself. And, you know, if you're going to do that, right, like if you're going to get yourself ready to play in the regular season that way, well, then you're going to have to live through mistakes in training camp. You're going to have to live through mistakes in preseason games. That's the only way you're going to figure out how to be more aggressive. So as they've really coached him on trying to become more aggressive, mistakes have come, and a lot of good things have come too. You know, and I think it's just sort of, that's part of the thing that, like, part of the problem I have with all these aggregation accounts on Twitter and everything else, Rich, is like they take single plays or a group of three plays and like act as if like the season's over or the season's made, right? And like the reality is, we can't climb in every one of these guys' heads, and every one of these guys has different goals for training camp. You know, now with a guy who's trying to make the team, we know what he's trying to do, right? Like, so if you're a rookie or you're a third year guy who someone's been drafted to replace you, like you don't have room to make mistakes. Like you have to, you have to put your best foot forward and it should look good every day. If you're a veteran and your coach is telling you, no, we want you to do this. It's like when I saw Brock Purdy, it was the same thing with him in San Francisco. He threw four picks the day I was there. And he explained to me after, he's like, I'm trying to test my limits. It's like, we don't know what the individual goals each of these guys have for every practice is. We don't know what the individual goals these guys have for the preseason games are. You know, so a lot of times what you see on the surface isn't what it appears to be. And so, you know, it takes talking to these guys. And, you know, like, I think that's really a huge part of our job is talking to these guys and figuring out what they're trying to accomplish. And there are times when they'll say, no, that was just stupid. I shouldn't have done that. But there are other times where it's like, I wanted to see if I could make that throw, you know? And it's a big part of training camp. And I know it's been part of Daniel Jones' training camp. Again, I'm not saying he's going to be all pro or anything like that, but you know, I think there is part of it that relates to the injury that's, you know, hampered his performance a little bit. And then there is, you know, an element of testing himself in different ways where I think you'll see some of the things that you saw in camp erased in that regard.
Daboll going to call the plays? Is he going to do it?
Yeah, it sounds like it. And okay. I think, you know, what's interesting about that too, is the primary area where they need a fix is the same as the Jets, right? It's the offensive line. Everybody saw that in the Hard Knocks series. And, you know, that's a big piece of their offseason, obviously, adding Greg Van Roten and Jermaine Illuminor and John Runyon to their offensive line, right? Like, and now we'll see what they can get out of Evan Neal. Well, another big piece of that was going and hiring Carmen Brasillo as their offensive line coach. And this isn't an under-the-radar hire, but it's an important one because Carmen Brasillo has New England background. He coached for Bill Belichick. He coached for Josh McDaniels in Vegas. His background is Brian Daboll's background. And so like they feel like they're going to be able to kind of streamline the offense a little bit and bring it back to what Brian Daboll knows best and what Brian Daboll has done best over the years. And that's always allowed Daboll to get the most out of the players that he's with. And so I'm interested to see how this whole thing comes together. But, you know, after a couple of years ago, we heard all about how like Daboll had gone outside his coaching tree to hire Mike Kafka, who's fantastic, and hire Wink Martindale and go all over the place to find all of these guys. You look at some of the hires he made this offseason, right?
Yes.
And they have similar background to him, right? Carmen Brasillo is one. Shane Bowen, their new defensive coordinator, is another. He came under Mike Vrabel, who, of course, is another guy with Patriot background. So sort of interesting that way and how they've set that up.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. You said you were at the Dolphins Bucks practices.
Joint practice
yep. Together. Were you there when the Tua comments about Brian Flores came out?
A little bit after.
Okay,
yeah.
So what was the conversation about that then?
You know, I think it's just Tua. When I asked people about it, it was interesting. It's like, that's Tua to a fault. Like, he's just honest. And if you ask him, especially in a setting like that, like that Dan and the guys had him in, like, you're going to get an honest answer. And I don't know how often he's been asked about Flores, you know, because they played so well the last couple of years because he personally has done so well and obviously has had some other things going on with the concussions and everything else. I don't know that anybody's really, you know, been diving into it the way that they did on the Levitard show. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's just sort of his honest truth. And what was really interesting about it to me is, you know, we talk about this stuff being generational and everything else. Do people forget what program Tua came from?
Like, exactly. Who he played for, like, that's the whole thing. Like, you know, anybody who's sitting here saying he can't take tough coaching, it's just like, get out of here, you know? So
here's the thing.
But it's obvious that Flores never wanted him, right? I mean, like, this now confirms it, right?
And I think that's part of the problem, right? Like, so part of the problem is, like, that You know, Flo, and there was some disagreement, and obviously it was close on who they were picking there, Tua or Herbert. And, you know, I think some of this could be harboring some of that. I also think it's like part of it's like where Brian Flores had been and how he'd coached guys in the past and how he'd seen guys coach in the past. I mean, it's legendary the way Bill Belichick coached Tom Brady, right? And Belichick's philosophy had always been, you coach the best players the hardest, and then everybody else falls in line. It's just sort of the way it is. And so that's how Brian Flores coached Tua. I think one thing that's interesting, though, here, and this part is generational, is how I think Nick Saban doesn't get credit for tailoring his coaching to the individual players and what the individual players need. And I think the best guys do that. And I think that's one thing that Brian Flores has learned from going through this. And I think he's learned a lot from going through this, because he's always been a guy who's been loved by the players, like, right? Except for the Miami thing. Ask Devin McCourty about him. Ask Kyle Van Noy about him. Ask Dante Hightower about him. Ask the guys in Minnesota now, guys like Harrison Smith about him.
But
right?
defensive players are different right. than quarterbacks, and so, man.
And the thing. And that's the lesson, right? Like, yeah. So that's the lesson. And here, I'll give you a really, really interesting story on C.J. Stroud that I think explains this to a T, right? So, like, last year, when the Texans were looking at who they were going to take second overall, Bobby Slowick, their offensive coordinator, got after C.J. Stroud in the 30 visit pretty good. And C.J. kind of shut down. And it was a way of testing him, and this happens a lot, right? Like, mm-hmm. So he shut down. And I heard about that, and that's a reason why I didn't mock Stroud to the Texans. So then, you know, afterwards, I circle back, and I kind of dug in a little bit more and try to figure out what happened. And it turns out, D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio then went back to the people at Ohio State and asked them about CJ and said, well, this kid's been through a lot in his life, so he's not going to, you know, react to, you know, a football coach who he doesn't know teaching him that, coaching him that intensely. You have to earn his trust. And not only did that get them to dig in more and wind up taking CJ Stroud, it also informed the way they coached CJ Stroud when they got him, you know? So, and you think about that, right? Like how what a great testament to the Texans organization that is that they set something up that didn't work for the player. They went and doubled back and checked into it again. And then, like, the lessons they learned not only wound up, you know, putting them in position to draft the guy, but then, you know, inform the way that they're teaching him going forward. I thought it was fascinating. And, you know, I think that that's sort of the lesson you can learn from these situations is that, you know, D'Amico and Bobby came from a very tough system in San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan coaches really hard, right? But you learn how to package it a little differently for every player. And I think that that's what's interesting about what Mike McDaniel's doing in Miami as well. And I know I'm being long-winded here. I think that's what Mike McDaniel is demanding as hell as a coach, but he packages it a little differently for every player. And those players know he has their back, you know? And so I think that that's probably a lesson that Flores takes from it. I think Flores is a fantastic coach. People forget his last, you know, 2 years there, they won 19 games. That's one less than Mike McDaniel's won the last 2 years following Flores in Miami. So it's not like Flores wasn't a really good head coach. Like, he did plenty of good there. But with maybe the most important relationship in the building, he failed. And, you know, it's my feeling at least that he's learned a lot from it.
Yeah. Quarterbacks, and certainly this generation of players, there's an operation manual. And it seems like McDaniel had it better for Tua than Flores did. And clearly D'Amico Ryans, and the rest of the Texans found the operation manual for C.J. Stroud, and it led to a unicorn season. I mean, I appreciate you lending that perspective. In the few minutes I have left with you, what is going on with these wide receiver contracts? And I imagine next week is the stroke of midnight here, right? You got to get these guys in week from Monday. You got to get them in, right? I mean, you can't just sign them.
Let's go over the last couple of years, though. T.J. Watt was what, the Saturday?
Correct, but before? Our different guys who go hunt are different than ones who need timing. One would think, right?
Yeah. I think T.J. Watt and Nick Bosa were right before the season, but yeah, I get what you're saying. I think they'd like to get him in as soon as possible, obviously. things have gotten really quiet on Brandon Ayuk, and that to me is fascinating. That we've been through so much, and there was so much noise, and now things have been quiet for a while tells me that things are improving there. And I think as much as anything, this is about bridging the personal gap on some of the things that happened and some of the things on the way things were handled over the course of the last couple of months. You know, I think John Lynch and Parag Marat and Kyle Shanahan deserve credit for handling this the way that they did, and that when the temperature got turned up, they sought closure on it, right? Like, so they basically said to Brandon Ayuk, if you think you can find a better financial and football situation than we offer you, go get it. Like, let's see if you can find it. Goes to New England. The financial situation, they had two offers on the table for him, both of them over $30 million a year. Football situation wasn't nearly as good. He wasn't as interested. Wasn't real interested in going to Cleveland. Pittsburgh, he has a rapport with Mike Tomlin. The football situation is pretty good. The money wasn't much different than San Francisco's. So ultimately doing that pushed Ayuk back to the table, and we'll see what happens. I think a key nuance to this one too, Rich, if they're going to pay Brock Purdy next year, who is the answer as a skill position player for the next 5 years? Debo's awfully beat up. Christian McCaffrey, you know, I think you look at the mileage on his legs. He's been a unicorn as a football player and performing as much as he has with the workload he's taken on, but he's not forever either. And then George Kittle's in his 30s. So Ayuk is the guy you want to pair with Purdy long term. Lamb, I think, gets done because I think the Cowboys are getting closer to the neighborhood where this sort of thing needs to be. And Jefferson's obviously the standard now. The question is whether or not he's an outlier. And so, you know, like that gap between what Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith and Nico Collins and Amon-Ra St. Brown got and Jefferson got, that's what has made this more difficult. So how close are you getting Lamb to Jefferson? And then that relates to Ja'Marr Chase too, where Chase and Jefferson obviously were in touch over the course of the offseason. So Chase knows exactly how things went with Minnesota and Jefferson, and he wants to be on that plateau. And I think for the Bengals, because things have been awfully quiet there, there hasn't been a lot of back and forth between the sides. I think for Chase, who has been professional through this whole thing, like the people there have told me he's been in meetings, he's helping the younger receivers, he's just not practicing. I think for Chase, it's all right, like, let's see if Jefferson's really the outlier. I actually think if Lamb gets close to what Jefferson got, that actually might push a deal over the goal line. Cause at that point, the Bengals have nowhere to go. You know what I mean? There's no more argument left. Like now there are two guys right up there and you got to get a deal done. And it's going to be a lot more costly to do it 6 months from now. Remember too, the Bengals did Burrow right before the year last year. I think it was 2 or 3 days before the opener. So it's not like they haven't been down this road with a star player recently.
Right. And you know, but he was going to be at least under contract and play. And the same thing with Dak this year. So that's the last one I have for you. That midnight can strike literally in a Cleveland hotel room the night before the season opener with Dak. Does that happen, do you think, Albert?
So the Cowboys have been principled on this one. And I think that there's this feeling of like, you know, do we just have to leapfrog, you know, everybody else? And, you know, obviously the Joneses have the context of having done this for a long time. And you can remember, was this probably, you know, almost 10 years ago now where, you know, Stafford, Carr, Garoppolo, Luck, like they all were leapfrogging each other. Matt Ryan was part of that. Aaron Rodgers at the end. So, like, do you just leapfrog the number that Burrow's at? What does the structure look like that? What does the guarantees look like that? Because, you know, Burrow's deal is a stronger deal than Lawrence or Love. It's just, I'm with the guarantees and structure. It's just a better deal. And it should be. He's been to a Super Bowl. So this one is, you know, a little complicated that way. That said, I think if you look at the history of the Cowboys, there's like huffing and puffing all the way to the finish line. And then they wind up paying their guys at the top of the market. It's just true, right? It happened before with Dak. It happened with Zeke Elliott. It happened with Zach Martin. It's happened so many times. It might be happening with CeeDee Lamb now too, where they're going to wind up paying him way more than they wanted to. But it's just happened so many times. And I'm not sure that something will get done. Like I said, I think they're sort of in that like Rams in 2020 with Jared Goff thing, like where it's like, like, is this guy going to be, you know, quite what we need to get us over the top? But are they, do they have the stomach to see what's behind door number two, where they go into the season with a quarterback in a contract year with it being like basically impossible to franchise tag him after this year? So he's got a freeway to free agency. It's tough to actually go through with that. We'll see if the Cowboys have the stomach for it, if the negotiation isn't where they think it should be 2 weeks from now.
You're the man, Albert, as always. Thanks for making me smarter and a great conversation. We'll chat soon, brother.
Awesome. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.
That's Albert Breer, everybody. Soup to nuts right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's take a break and find out what the hell's happening behind me. I don't know. There's all sorts of stuff moving. We're backing up trucks. That's Don. No, you can show it. I don't care. It's either just coming. There's not an angle that doesn't show boxes being moved behind. Right, we're back on the Rich Eisen Show in a second.
Our presence is helping commerce.
Hey, everybody. You know we're living in a new age of football with the expanded college football playoff, NIL, conference realignment, and increasing popularity of the draft. The landscape is changing, and it's changing quickly, and it can be confusing, but you know you're still into it. That's where the new podcast, The Triple Option, comes in. Each week, Heisman Trophy winner Mark Ingram, host Rob Stone, and three-time national champion coach Urban Meyer team up to bring on the biggest guests in college football, pro football, and anything related to the culture of the game. They cover it all, from top stories to recent changes and shifts in the game, the culture surrounding it, and everything in between. So get in the game today. Follow and subscribe to The Triple Option on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Triple Option on YouTube as well. New episodes drop Wednesday mornings. Are you struggling to close deals? Business-to-business selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/direct. That is linkedin.com/direct for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/direct and get started.
So you guys don't have unique names.
What do you mean, see, you guys? What do you mean by that?
I'm just saying, there's no one saying, Tom Brady won the Super Bowl, I'm going to name my baby Tom. That's not how it works. Tom is too simple. Shaquille, Alshon, these are unique names that people will name their kids. I promise you. Steve, am I right or wrong?
Steve is not laughing. He's not looking at you, and he is leaning as far from
the microphone. Steve is a regular name.
Well, that's not
Steve is a regular name.
Steve is the name that folks can pronounce.
Oh, see, now Steve got another name.
Wow.
Steve, what's your other name?
My real name, which is three people call me, my mama, my grandma, and my wife, is actually Steve-on.
Now,
Stevonne.
Now, Stevonne. Had you used that name? Had you used that name, right? You're the legend you are. Had you used that name, do you know what would have happened? In any city you played in, everybody had a baby with a name, their baby, Stevonne. You know what would happen? You know what's up? I don't care what city you played in. Carolina? Baltimore, whatever city you played in, that city would have had babies with that name.
Santa Monica.
Every time you score a touchdown, they'd be like, I'm naming my baby Steve-on. Well, right? You know, right?
Well, Steve-on, thanks for coming on, Steve-on. Thanks for coming on, Steve-on.
You got it, Rich.
Even mentioning that name right now, a few light bulbs went off. This baby is due tomorrow. Perfect.
Y'all some dirtbags.
I love that segment. That is fun. Let's just rewatch back. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. So a couple things here about the last segment. First things first. You hear the beeping in the background? Again, I don't know why it bothers me so much.
You can't stand that ambient noise.
No,
this is like Caliocho all over again.
Like, very good. it's not the ambient noise. And by the way, it's great that we have activity around here.
Yeah. People
used to be, again, we were born 10 years ago this October when DirecTV was the main, took up every office here. Mm-hmm. The first segment of our show in our history, you remember Chris Long, our overlord and our great major domo, ran the Audience Network and so much more around here. He got like 500 people to come out of the offices to surround me and a big jib camera and everything.
I was one of them.
You were one of them, right?
Yeah, I was out there.
So it's amazing. So I don't mind the activity. I just don't.
Because we went like 3 years with none.
It's just that literally we have two shots. It's this shot, and you could take the other one, Don, if you want, in that shot. Behind us.
And you can see
there's a truck that's backing up behind right now. So there's only a small space of like 10 feet by 10 feet, square feet, that's in that area behind us.
And all the
that could actually be seen through our window on the two shots that we have. And for some reason,
they're there.
Always.
Every bit of activity that takes place out there happens right there where that yellow truck.
But we have windows to show activity. I don't know why it bothers me so much. But I found out who's moving in.
Oh.
The toy company Hasbro.
Hasbro?
Is moving in.
Really?
Yes.
Hasbro.
Remember like all of the Saturday morning?
Yes.
Look at your face, Sue. It's like you recognize the name.
But like Hasbro 10 years too late.
It's a teddy bear.
All of the commercials from like a Saturday morning TV was like Hasbro games and stuff, right?
Oh, my God. Cooper would have loved that. By the way, when we're in the car,
Transformers.
Cooper now says, with supplies and solutions.
Does he really? He knows
the Grainger read.
Lincoln
Logs
was Hasbro.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, Play-Doh.
Monopoly was Hasbro.
I'm looking at.
Don't bother me. That was. Maybe
it
was.
Hey. Can I get some Play-Doh?
Sure.
I was a big
Play-Doh.
Play-Doh
smells so good.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about that?
Yes.
Did you ever open a fresh Play-Doh?
Play-Doh, when you opened it up, that
smells
first.
Smells so good, right?
Yes.
Hold on a minute. You didn't eat Play-Doh, did you?
Well, at first you had to because you didn't know you couldn't eat it, so you had to maybe taste it a little bit.
Rich, I was not the guy that ate stuff that I played. Like, I wasn't doing that stuff.
You didn't eat?
No.
You could admit if you ate Play-Doh, Mike.
No, I didn't eat Play-Doh.
I just remembered when you had the Play-Doh and you started making shapes and whatever.
Play-Doh was great.
Yeah,
that's a top 10.
That's our new neighbor. Star Wars, apparently? The Hasbro makes the Star Wars games?
The Avengers.
Okay. Look at us.
The Care Bears. I mean,
hey.
Care Bears.
You know?
More stuff for our studio.
Easy Bake Oven.
I was going to say, how do we capitalize on this somehow?
Transformers.
Well, we send you over
there.
We
should send Mike outside
with
the ENG.
Now it's all in boxes being moved in behind us.
So what if we walked over there and just acted like we were unloading the boxes and just brought them over here?
I took a box.
I operate a forklift. I'll get a couple boxes.
Oh, my God.
G.I. Joe is Hasbro.
Hold on a second.
Let me get a
couple. I got a forklift license. Come on, Rich.
When was the last time you operated a forklift?
Actually, I'm not going to lie to you. At the boatyard, probably like 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I drove the thing.
Hold on a minute.
Mikey, I don't want to. I love you. I don't want to risk you with heavy machinery in a boatyard. That means there's water nearby.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't go anywhere near.
He's always in the water.
I didn't go near. But yes.
I know, but
forklifts are easy to drive.
You know what would happen. He'd be like driving the forklift.
And it would go off
there's
the side.
There's water right there. He'd fall over.
Oh, he's already fallen in.
Wait
plenty
a minute.
Of time, so.
I've just been told Mike Hoskins is because everybody's Googling what Hasbro makes right now, not that they're new neighbors.
Uh-oh.
Twister.
Twister.
We can get a Twister set in here.
I'm not. The Twister I'm talking about is not going to happen around here.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I mean, Susie.
God.
Hey, keep it up with Susie.
Our
son
might be watching.
I'm sorry.
Are you kidding me? You're the one who was just, you know, like.
Breathy is what I could say. Breathy?
That was so funny.
You should watch that segment from the first
I was
hour.
Crying.
I'm still laughing every time.
I can't wait for that to get posted to YouTube.
Mike.
Hey, McAfee can't be the only one having fun on the air.
Oh, by the way, McAfee's getting hammered in Ireland right now.
They are drinking their heads
off. Oh, my God.
If it's any consolation, if you weren't in that chair and Susie was, we'd be getting hammered right now, too.
By the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's go to Mitch in Dallas, Texas. You're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Mitch?
Hey, Rich. How you doing?
What's going on, Mitch?
Rich and Mitch.
Not too much. I thought we'd go down this Brown schedule and see what the Brownies could do.
Oh, we're in lost game, everybody.
Browns fan in Dallas?
Yeah, really? So how's this? How's hold on a second. How's week one going to work for you, Mitch? Seriously, like, are you the only Browns fan in Dallas that you know of?
No, they're all over the place down here. They're like...
Browns fans, Mitch, really?
Okay, here we go. Mitch, in Dallas, Texas, doing the win-loss game for the Cleveland Browns. What happens when the Cowboys stroll into the dog pound? Week one.
Mitch, what happens?
Well, in keeping with the Browns' tradition, they're going to lose their opening game. So Dallas wins that.
Okay, that's an opening loss. Let me get a pen that works.
Smart
Next
man,
up,
Mitch.
At the Jaguars.
That's a win.
Home for the Giants.
That's a win.
At the Raiders.
That's a win.
At the Commanders.
A win.
Without the season opening loss, he'd be 5/17 of the way to what the Miz said about his team right now. All right. At the Eagles.
This is where Deshaun Watson goes down with an injury and they lose that game.
All right. 4-2, home for the Bengals.
They lose that game.
Oh, because I thought you Browns fans think you still own Joe Burrow forever. All right.
Well, yeah, different year, you know. I'm basically looking at they split all their in-division games. So I'm going to say they win at Baltimore.
All right. No, but
they win at home, Baltimore.
Okay, you're already ahead of me. Very good. 5-3, home for the Chargers.
They lose that game.
Yeah, I know. Jim Harbaugh knows how to win in Ohio. Off the bye at the Saints.
They win.
Okay. 6-4, home for the Steelers on a Thursday night.
They win that game.
7-4 at the Broncos on a Monday night.
They win that game.
8-4 at the Steelers.
They lose that game.
8-5, home for the Chiefs.
They lose that game.
8-6 at the Bengals on a Thursday night.
They win that game.
Then they are now home for the Dolphins.
They win that game.
And then at the Ravens.
They win
that one. Okay, 1, 2, 3,
yeah,
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 6, says Mitch.
That's
Dallas.
Generous, too.
Okay, I don't know. I mean, there you go, 11 and 6. Thanks for the call, Mitch. Appreciate it. The Miz had him 17-0, as we know.
Right.
And then he went full Hawk Tua when the Dolphins came up. 10-7, Tom and Canton, Jake in Ohio, had him 11-6. Those are the Browns fans who have chimed in.
And Ted in South Carolina had him 11-6.
Are you gonna miss the win loss game when the football season with the actual win loss game starts to play out week by week?
Am I gonna miss it?
Yeah, fans calling and playing the win loss game.
You know, I love when we can get interactive. So we gotta come up with something that's gonna keep them calling all year.
Oh, no, it's like, called the NFL. The actual wins and the actual losses.
True.
Hopefully,
something a little bit more. I don't know. We gotta figure it out. Something.
I'm gonna like it for Dallas. I love the win-loss game
such a
for
troll. He's such a troll.
All right, very good. Let's take a break. 844-204-RICH number. I've been told Quinnen Williams is being pulled into meetings, will not join us today. That means there's more time for us to talk before the fantasy footballers stroll into our studio. Mike Wright and Jason Moore in Hour 3. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. And let me tell you about Greenlight, folks. My wife and I use it for our oldest kid. Time is moving fast. Used to be, you didn't have to worry about what your kids were doing with money. But Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and money habits while kids also learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Anytime my oldest son uses his Greenlight card, I get an alert. How much he's spending, where he's spending it, and he also knows the limit that he has, so he learns how to save, invest, and spend wisely. I use it, my wife uses it, my kids use it, you should too. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/rich. That's greenlight.com/rich to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/rich. The Rich Eisen Show is sponsored by Grainger. Does this sound familiar?
You're a maintenance specialist, and you've been squaring off with a leaky radiator at your facility for hours. You're both drenched in sweat. You've thrown the whole playbook at it, but so far it's got an answer for everything. What you need is a teammate, a pro who's seen it all before, and that's Grainger. With support specialists always ready to chat, the product you need, plus a million more, just give this ringer a ring. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by one of their local branches.
Back here on our program, there goes the truck. he's going. Seriously.
There he is. He's going.
Is that the Play-Doh box?
This is really bothering you.
It's not bothering me. They're breaking down boxes. Like, literally, they couldn't do that 5 feet over the other way. You know what I'm saying?
That's the entrance. That's right there, Rich.
I understand that.
I mean, we got to.
But they're literally, let's move the boxes. Let's break it down. Let's see this guy break down a box. Just throw it there.
Just so people don't think Rich is like complaining, you got to understand there is a ton of real estate behind this back here.
Oh,
a ton of empty space.
Well, the other shot can show it too.
It does seem every time something happens, it is literally
the guy walking into work.
Same spot. Somebody leaves a garbage can there, or somebody.
They left one of those yellow like caution.
Yeah, and I moved it the one day,
but it was on top of nothing. They just left it there.
Yeah, I didn't see anything.
There wasn't anything to express caution about. No, there was no need to warn anybody about that space. It just left it there.
Very Costanza of you to complain
about
this.
What do you mean?
It's a little Costanza.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? It's a little Costanza. Like, you're spending real estate on this. We have seven people on hold who want to talk about football.
I know that.
And you're worried about these guys. Do you want me to go back out there? I'll go right now.
To do what?
Clear them out.
No, no, guys. No, they're working. I understand what they're trying to do. I welcome Hasbro with open Play-Doh arms.
Yeah.
Ooh. Like, I would, you know, like, honestly, and I know how to do that. You take the Play-Doh out,
and then you
put it in one of those, circle, and then create these tubes,
and
you put
it
and it looks like arms.
Monopoly. You guys are so weird.
Monopoly.
Weird.
Monopolies are
great. You're weird.
I welcome them.
I used to have fun with that.
But it would just be nice. Let's pick up the pace.
Like, 10 feet to the left is all we're saying.
Way. You know? I'm happy. All right, we're back here. Game Time Tickets. Make sure that the Game Time Tickets app is on a mobile device. Start buying tickets. Football season is around the corner. Concert season, fall concert season in your area. Maybe you're starting to take a look at who's coming in, who's going to come visit. Who do you want to go see? Make sure you go to Game Time Tickets, certainly if you want to watch a football game live. And I love using Game Time Tickets for many reasons. It makes buying tickets easier. The all-in pricing feature is my favorite because there's no surprise fees at checkout. You get to see exactly the cost of your ticket up front before you buy. You can get a panoramic view from your seat to see where the field is and how you could see the field from where you're trying to buy your tickets in the app. So take the guesswork out of buying football tickets right now with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use my code Rich. You get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account, redeem my code RICH. You get $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. And the other thing I want to talk about with Albert Breer's segment is when we're talking about Tua and his relationship between the two coaches that he's had in Miami and how Brian Flores clearly coached him in a way that made him feel less than. And Mike McDaniel coaches him in a way that makes him feel more than. And in that case, sometimes less is not more. And the old school way, less meaning more, worked. Maybe for a different generation of quarterbacks. And sometimes you can give them less. And as long as you give them more on occasion, balance it out. Clearly Nick Saban did that. You know he had to coach Tua tough. Tua told us the story at the Super Bowl before he got drafted in Miami. At the Super Bowl from Miami. Told the story about how he joked about taking a sack before he won the game in overtime against Georgia when Saban was all over him about taking the sack after he threw the touchdown pass.
The game was over.
Saban's like, you know, amongst the confetti and everything, don't take sacks like that. And Tua said he joked with him. Yeah, but I threw a touchdown and Saban didn't like it. So clearly, you know, he can handle tough coaching. And then Breer tells a story about how the first blush meeting between Bobby Sloak, the OC, handpicked OC of the new head coach of the Texans, DeMeco Ryans, and he gave C.J. Stroud some really tough coaching that Stroud did not respond well to during the process of the draft evaluation. And I tell you, I heard rumors Texans aren't taking C.J. Stroud because Sloak and him did not see eye to eye in the process of evaluating. I heard that going into the draft. And when they chose C.J. Stroud that night, I'm sitting on the draft set thinking to myself, well, I guess that information was off. Literally was thinking that in the back of my head as I'm like, DJ, Daniel Jeremiah, what do you think of this draft choice? Because I had heard. And I was thinking to myself, after Bryce Young went first, we're chit-chatting, waiting for the Texans to make their announcement. I was thinking in the back of my head as I'm hosting the draft, is it possible that they're not taking Stroud? Could that be possible? Well, sure enough, they did. Because as Breer just said, they figured out the operation manual with Ryans and everybody else talking to Ryan Day of Ohio State saying, hey, this is the way he's been brought up. This is the upbringing that he's had. This is the difficulty he has when he hears this from people he does not yet trust. They built up the trust and look what happened. Boom. Oh my gosh. So does this mean Brian Flores is a bad coach? No. What it means is that he just probably brought the Belichick way of coach the best player the hardest into the equation because he saw what Belichick did to Brady, and Tua ain't Brady. Different generation, different style, different way of handling this guy. That Brady had a massive chip on his shoulder. And by the way, the coach who was coaching him hard drafted him. Sixth round. The coach that was coaching Tua hard drafted him and may have been an argument in the room, and he might have been pounding the table for Herbert. Just amazing insight on how it all works and how you need to realize what's up. And if Flores gets a second shot, I'm wondering how he might handle his quarterback situation differently. Wouldn't you?
No doubt.
Training camp stories, man. Just hearing them all, and then obviously draft stories that lead to drafting, and then training camps, and then playing seasons. Greatest narrative generating machine there is, National Football League. And then there's great stories about this time of year. Who makes teams and who does not? Mm-hmm. Again, I know we crap on preseason football for various reasons. And I know, you know, everybody's like, well, you're going against second stringers and third stringers, and those are the ones who are going to start, you know, having to figure out life is working in actual real tough jobs, like earning a living outside of football. And are these guys really going to be playing football? Well, some of them are might be using that as motivation, saying, I'm going to make the most of my opportunity here on this night. Certainly, if you've got a football name like Carson Steele. Now, again, I didn't see him play at UCLA, nor did a lot of UCLA fans, thinking he should have played more. I'm talking to you, Smitch. But the way he ran, I was thinking to myself, is this the son of Remington? I know that's an old school pop culture reference a lot of people don't get.
I got you.
But you like this guy, right, TJ?
I mean, you know, it's always fun when you have a story like this, a kid who, like, you know, he's on the borderline, he's on the verge of not making the team, and just you could tell a lot of grit, a lot of heart, you know. UCLA, so I've heard of him, of course, being here, and he's got a pet crocodile.
Yeah, I mean, and it looks like the way he played last night and stiffed on the Chicago Bear, running one in from about 40 yards out last night, that he does have like a crocodile or an alligator?
One of the two, crocodile or an alligator.
Well, I mean, there's a big difference, isn't it?
I mean, there is, but...
Oh, my God, look at that.
Alligator. That is an alligator.
Suze, should we bring one of those home instead of a Great Pyrenees or what?
What the hell do you need that for? I mean...
His name's Carson Steele, and he's got a pet alligator, and he's stiff-arming people.
Is a great name for a football player, number one.
Yes.
And its name is Crocky J.
Crocky J.
Crocky J. Yeah.
Nobody needs a crocodile. I'm sorry.
So you're naming an alligator Croc. Now, that's confusing.
That's where I was confused.
I knew you were going there. I know you, so I'm like, three, two,
all right, thank you.
Where do you get the alligator?
At the alligator store?
I mean, is there physically an alligator store that we go? I like this one a little better than this one.
31-yard run.
Such a bad idea, though.
I mean, could you imagine? So they got Isaiah Pacheco running like that. Now, could he run like that with him? Are they gonna? Is he going to make the team? Because he might make the Kansas City Chiefs 53 running like that.
It seems like he will, you know. Here's my prediction. He makes the squad, and he becomes this year's Peyton Hillis. Remember Peyton Hillis?
Oh.
Former Brown.
So Carson Steele's going to be on the cover of Madden one day, is what you're
saying?
Well,
I mean, he can only hope, but yeah, I mean, you can tell he's the type of guy that Chiefs fans are going to like. There's, like I said, there's always guys like that that you kind of rally around and you like. They play hard, they're gritty, and they just got that something different about them. And,
well, he lit up Mahomes last night. You see Mahomes' reaction? You
know, if Mahomes has anything to say with this, which I'm sure he might, this kid's going to be on the team. Mahomes was loving him yesterday.
They just paid Creed Humphrey, too.
Well, you know.
They paid Creed Humphrey,
too. Well,
that's
why Pat took such a discount, so you could sign guys like Carson.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. That guy is now the highest paid center, I believe, in the National Football League. And he is 100% the heart and soul of this offensive line, right up the gut. He's the one that centers up Mahomes to hand it to Pacheco or maybe Carson Steele and run it downhill. Oh, my goodness gracious. The two-time defending champion Kansas City Chiefs have got a running back named Carson.
About that.
Carson Steele.
That's a great, great name.
Isn't it?
He's making it,
man. Well, I would be great. That's one of the names to look for when the 53 men come out. Chiefs are done. Next time we hear from them will be 2 weeks from last night. They and the Bears are done. Next time we see the Bears, it'll be Caleb Williams against Jeffrey Simmons saying the words painted nails at him.
The Bears. By the way, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to say this the other day. You know, that was the knock against Caleb, right? A lot of people just were up in arms because he painted his fingernails and he had a pink phone case and this, that, and the third. Well, watching Hard Knocks, there was something I noticed that has not been, no one's ever talked about yet. No painted nails, no pink case. So if that was your knock on him, if that was for some reason why you held it against him, there's none of that right now. My man's out there. He's just grinding.
He also said he's going to paint his nails a different color every game, though, which is all good, man.
That's fine. But like right now when he's in camp, he has it.
By the way, if that's part of his superpower, then paint your nails, sir. Paint them the way you wish. Hour three, fantasy footballers coming in studio. Yeah. So here's what we should do. We should have a segment called...
Were you painting your nails?
No. Oh. No. If we should have a segment called... I'm trying to give you a segment and you're interrupting me.
Okay. What's the segment?
Where you crown a player each week.
Yeah, like the player...
As one of your guys.
I'd like that. Like the player of the week.
Can you wear a real crown?
I don't know. We can get you a crown if you'd like. I want a crown. You do the Dennis Green, you know, you crown a player.
Hey, give me a podium. We have one of them.
We used to do that on NFL Network every Monday night where Marshall Faulk would crown a player.
I'm with
that. And we would use the famous Dennis Green drop as well.
They are who we thought they were.
And if you want to crown them.
Yeah, come on, TJ.
I'm down that. We're going to do that this year. Give me about a week
TJ's
and a half.
Once a week, you crown a player that you love. Like you'd crown Carson Steele.
Let's get a sponsor for it.
You did that. You were the first to say the name Ramondre Stevenson on this program.
I mean, you tell no lies when it comes to that.
You were the first to come in and say that the Patriots have some guy.
And he was a special
team. Your guy.
I just, you know, I'm the guys with the locks, I kind of look at them because, you know, we got that in common, you know. But I just knew Ramondre had something.
I look at them differently with a little bit of wistfulness. By the way, last night, Kevin Garnett retweeted out a SportsCenter highlight I did of Marbury versus Allen Iverson in 1997.
Oh, word?
And my hair was glorious.
Well, that matchup was glorious.
His tweet was the MF days. And I'm like, no, they're more of the salad days for me.
Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass.
All right, finally found the drop.
I like that. Coming soon.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show.
Tucker Carlson, what is it that you think that people gravitate towards?
I'm not self-aware. I refuse to be self-aware. I don't even look in mirrors at all, which you can probably tell from my appearance. I don't have a crazy high IQ, or I really don't have that many skills. I would say my main skill is I believe my instincts. I don't hesitate to follow my instincts, ever. The extent that I have, I've gotten in trouble.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.